Welcome to the Armada podcast, where we are focusing in on DAO governance. Let's hop into the show. If you could start with who you are and what you're working on.
I'm Chase Chapman. I am a co-founder of a company called Decentology. So we're working on developer tooling for different layer ones and side chains. And I'm also involved in a couple different DAOs and have a podcast about the human side of Web3. So have my hands in a lot of different things, but all fun things.
Yeah, and your podcast is awesome. It obviously covers, I think, some of the similar things that we're doing with Armada, but I love how you're really exploring the whole Web3 space and really thinking about it in a very holistic way, which I think is great because I came in really focused on governance and it's exciting to see a broader perspective of it. So I'm a big fan of the podcast.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, I think governance is such a human problem and a human question. So really trying to take a human approach to everything in Web3, I think, is always fun to explore.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to ask you, which fictional character would you love to have dinner?
This is a strange answer, but I've always loved Fight Club. And I think it would be really interesting to have a meal and sit down with Tyler from Fight Club. And also, after rewatching it, after being in crypto for a bit, I realized I don't want to spoil it, but the end is actually very in line with decentralization. So would love to pick his brain on that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of quotes that I feel like I've been running into over the last like year where you're like, wow, okay, yeah, as I'm in my mid-30s, and so watching Fight Club essentially as like a young teenager, I did not pick up a lot of the actually really interesting, insightful things that he was saying along the way.
Oh my God, yeah. The strange nature of the film like distracts you from everything, but there are so many good little nuggets in there. And I think there's probably a lot of underlying sort of decentralization themes. Maybe that laid the groundwork for me going into crypto. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think you're wrong on that at all. I think I agree with that. So what, like broadly, what has gotten you excited about, you know, DAOs, decentralization? Like what has inspired you to work in this Web3 space?
Yeah. So I actually originally got interested in crypto because I was working in marketing and we were doing data analytics, buying data sets for companies. And it just felt wrong to me that people weren't able to own their data. And so I fell down the blockchain rabbit hole through that route and then got exposed to all the really interesting things that were happening in crypto more broadly. Started working in the space, got involved with an org called SHE256 out of UC Berkeley. Which is an amazing org. They match women who want to get involved with mentors in the space. Ended up actually co-founding a company with my mentor and working on developer tooling and we're slowly decentralizing that. Now that we're moving towards that, I've had some time to explore more of the DAO space and get more involved, which has been amazing. I've been diving in head first and it's been an absolute blast. It's interesting to see the sort of like newest evolution of where I think Web3 is going.
And how would you articulate where it's going?
I think the nature of how we're working is changing. One of the things that is really interesting to me about DAOs is that not only can you provide value to an organization in a way that is a lot more expedited than I think any other mechanism of working. You don't have to join a company. You can just start contributing. But I also think that the level of involvement is really varied, which I think is super cool. Like you can work 20 hours, 40 hours a week for DAO, or you can work 2 hours a week for DAO. And to me, that's like an amazing new way of engaging with organizations that I think really hasn't been enabled at scale. So that gets me super excited. And I think there's so much potential that unlocks.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And before we started recording, I was telling Chase, just feel like on Twitter, we keep tweeting similar things and on the same wavelength of thinking about how you can be more inclusive and onboard people into these DAOs. And I've been beating this drum of like, right people, right time. And what are the right models that we use in these kind of real life situations of how we organize? Of like alumni groups are a great example of, right? It's like I might not know every single alumni person, and you certainly don't know every alumni person, but it's that alumni bridge that either allows you to have that, you get that first interview because you're an alumni, or you get that intro you're looking for. And what I think is so fascinating about that is that we tend to think about DAOs as being this, you know, collective type group working on something, but that fringe group of people of saying, hey, right person at the right time to give you 15 minutes or apply their right introduction, whatever it is. I think I totally agree with you of like, how do we think about the full spectrum of involvement? It doesn't have to be in this kind of classic, I work at this company. There's so many ways to contribute. So I 100% agree with you thinking there.
And it's so cool because I think when you do that, you give people the opportunity to express themselves in really different ways. So an example of this is I currently contribute to a DAO called Forefront. So we're basically essentially like aggregating insights and doing cool experiments around the social token space. And in my sort of like daily life, I get to do developer tooling. I get to do videos for Forefront, so sort of on the content side. But then I also get to contribute to Index Co-op, where we talk about like very deep in DeFi and all these different pieces. So I think it's really cool to give people an opportunity to not just contribute small bits and pieces at the right time, but also to like totally explore a pretty wide variety of different verticals and skills. And I think that's like the coolest part about being a contributor.
Yeah, that's thinking a lot about this flexibility. The gig economy swept the country maybe 5-7 years ago, something like that. And there was this, I think, a lot of thinking in the technical world, especially in the Web2 space, of like, oh, is that the future of work, right? Is like, hey, I do a couple Uber rides and I deliver some food. And that's a very practical meat space type activity in the gig economy. But how do we think about that in this knowledge worker space? And how do we flip the incentive model to not be these Uber type companies capturing the value, but allowing people to float around? And yeah, perhaps this is a new wave of go where your heart desires and what you're into and where you can, and don't necessarily worry about the day to day. That's an interesting world.
Oh, 100%. And that's where I think onboarding is a really interesting space to explore, because in an ideal world, onboarding actually makes it super easy for people who are interested in contributing in some capacity to a DAO to begin contributing. And I think the easier we can make that, and of course you have to have filters and we can go into all of these interesting nuances of onboarding, but the cool thing is that if you can make that really simple, then you enable people to contribute to a bunch of different things and essentially provide value that if they were locked up at Facebook or Google and that was where all of their time and energy was going, there's so much innovation that doesn't happen because their time is monopolized basically by those companies.
Yeah, the onboard, let's get into some of the nuances in it, because I think about filtering and credentialing as being this really interesting problem. I've with Kraushaus, I've noticed that the people I think that have been involved the most in the early day, and they're awesome. This is not meant to me saying that this isn't the right group of people to be contributing, but I think they're all relatively type A personalities. They're connected perhaps, and they're like, hey, I'm going this Discord. I've done this. I've done that. I think we should do this. There's like the loud voices and the ones going to roll up their sleeves right away. And part of me that I keep going back and forth on is that the nature of early contributors to DAOs is they have to have initiative. They have to be the ones to go do that. Or is it just like a byproduct of social behavior that the ones that tend to be those types are the ones who roll in or the earliest? Because some of the best team members I've ever had in Web2 space are not those personalities. They're really quiet. It takes a lot to get them to have a conversation about those things, but they're incredibly talented. They just engage and connect in a different way. And I've really been struggling with how to think about onboarding to adapt to both personalities. Do you have a take on like, is this just a problem that we have with Discord, or is this like a human thing? Like, how would you think about that?
Yeah, I think you're bringing up one of the most interesting aspects of the space right now, which is that generally, if those are the people who we're building these systems for, are the people who are like louder and more willing to just dive into something and will say anything and everything on Discord, like they just share their stream of thought, we're really not creating a system that people who don't follow that personality type can contribute to. And I think that thinking about people like that is super important. An initial sort of thought on this is that I think when you see people who are like a little bit more shy, or maybe you can tell they're watching, but they're not necessarily taking the next step and contributing, something that I've noticed that's super useful is like getting on a call with them. And I think the reason that it works well is because reassuring people like, hey, you're in the right spot. We can definitely use you. We would love for you to shine, and creating that space for someone to shine, I think is something that's super important. And I think we need to figure out systemic ways to do more of that right now. I've noticed it's a lot of one-on-ones, and that's so awesome. And it works. You don't always have to do things at scale, but I think we have to find ways to make that scale. And then I think the second half of it that's super interesting, that's unique to Web3, is actually this ownership piece. So to me, one of the most empowering parts about being part of a DAO is that you can effectively, and you do effectively, own a part of that community, typically through token. And so by giving people that ownership and creating a space that is transparent and gives them the ability to not only feel like an owner, but actually take steps and take action toward making the community what they want it to be, I think you do empower those people. And that ownership piece combined with maybe better systems for empowering people who don't fit that type A sort of archetype, I think is going to be a huge part of this. And one-on-ones, again, are an initial way to do it. I think longer term, it's probably going to need to be a little bit more like smaller bounties where people can start and get past the initial barrier of contribution. Other things like that really optimize for action and help people get past barriers that maybe right now DAOs have in front of them, even if we don't realize that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying there. And I think the one-on-ones, it's a great strategy. And I think that the size of the industry, it probably works right now. But to your point, yeah, like how do we do that in a scalable way, especially over time? It's something that keep me up at night. It's probably too strong of a statement, but it's something that concerns me in that regard, because I am worried about Web3 and specifically DAOs scaling because of that. And I think it opens up like this almost philosophical question, which is like, the way that we handle labor in the kind of classic Web2 startup ecosystem is you're hiring a lot of people that are extremely talented. You're hiring a lot of people that are probably medium level of talent. And then obviously you have low performers, and low performers might be wrong fit. Maybe it's wrong fit from a company perspective, a culture perspective, maybe a company or skill perspective, whatever it may be. But if you focus on that like medium level group of people, like you're probably talking about, it's fair to say somewhere in the 33 to probably 50%, if not higher, percentage of workers probably fall somewhere in that camp. And my sort of philosophical question to probably both of us is, Web2 in the startup ecosystem great at extracting value from that mediocre set of people? And then you focus it with the higher achievers, and then that allows you to create the success. And my question is to us is, are DAOs set up to really succeed with that medium group of people? Because I think that we hear a lot about the people who come in, they get their check and then they cash out and they're not really engaged and not really doing it. The question is, are they making meaningful enough contributions that they are net positive for these corporations that we might not be able to facilitate in Web3? And what's the delta between those two universes? Does that hypothetical make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes sense. I think an interesting aspect of this is thinking about this notion of going back to different skill sets that you can essentially build and exercise. Might be a strange verb to use, but exercise. Sure. Within DAOs, I think that wider variety might be the difference between Web2 and Web3, in that if you are an accountant in Web2, you might actually hate accounting. And right. I say in Web2, it doesn't necessarily need to be online, but you might actually hate accounting, but you already have the momentum of being an accountant. You got your CPA, like you, it's just easier to keep going, save up for retirement and be on your merry way. I think in Web3, if you're super passionate about accounting, join Llama because they're doing cool stuff, or join other DAOs that are thinking heavily and need people who are doing accounting. But if you're not passionate about that, and if actually in Web2 you're going home from your accounting job and working on like graphic design, let's say, and you're playing around with it and having fun with it, in my mind, the transition from Web2 to Web3 is actually that you might still do a little bit of work for an accounting DAO, but actually you start to do way more graphic design work and you start to play around with things. And so I have this probably naive philosophy that if you are really passionate about something, you'll get better at it. And so the potential ideal world, which this might not play out, but philosophically is interesting to think about, is that actually Web3 allows people to figure out what they are passionate about. And because DAOs allow for a lot more flexibility when it comes to work, you can essentially practice that skill and get better and better at skills that you're actually passionate about, instead of forcing yourself to stay down this sort of path just because you have momentum. We'll see how on-chain reputation and other things actually potentially make it less flexible. But I think that there's probably something there. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's just an ideal view of the world.
Yeah, it perhaps is idealistic, but I think that's why Web3 is so awesome, is that a lot of us are idealistic and we're trying to reinvent a future that is better. So idealistic, be it may, it doesn't really matter to me. I think that it's an awesome perspective, and I think it's one that should be cherished, because I think that let's put forth the most idealistic version. And if we fall, like, that's okay. Like, we should be shooting for something fundamentally different. So I applaud it regardless.
It's like we want to get rid of people. We're not getting rid of people who are mediocre. We're just, if you assume that being mediocre comes from a place of a lack of passion, I hope that's how the world works. I don't know. But yeah, I think building the world that we want to see, or at least trying to, is definitely a way to go. And if people can work on things that they're actually passionate about instead of getting stuck in jobs and working on projects they don't like, that's a Web3 I want to live in.
Yeah, I think that's probably the path that has the highest success in that is you can't think about Web2 startup ecosystems of being, hey, I want a job and this is how I get paid and I guess I'm okay at programming, so I guess I'm going to work at Facebook. Like that whole mentality is fundamentally different in this much more eclectic kind of many sovereignties within Web3, which is it's a different thing. To your point, like, hey, if you're an accountant and you want to go and you like graphic design, perhaps you contribute mostly to graphic design DAOs because that's where your heart lies. And this new ecosystem allows you to go do that. Yeah, you're challenging a really baseline primitive of what work is. And I love that. So perhaps that's the world we're in.
And it's cool because I've been talking to a lot of people about this. I think if you're passionate about something, and let's say it is graphic design, you don't have to be amazing at it at first. Honestly, you could complete a bunch of low-level bounties and DAOs might not even use that work. That's actually okay. It's the fact that you're consistently practicing something that you're passionate about, which tells me personally, again, maybe this is just my view of the world, but that you'll get better at it. And ultimately, if you keep doing it consistently enough, you'll be able to contribute to DAOs in a meaningful way. And I think that's the beauty of what's happening now. I hope that it stays this way. I don't think that fundamental change in like work will evolve incredibly with the evolution of Web3. I'm not sure, but I don't think that's, you know, something that's unique to early adopters of DAOs. I think that will continue to happen. And I hope it does, because I think it's a beautiful way to work and to be able to practice skills and evolve as a human being with things that you're passionate about instead of being stuck somewhere, because that's no fun.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a tweet that you had recently, which was around governance has high overhead. And this problem of reading through forums and you have to stay involved in the Discord and there's all these things going on in order to kind of actually understand what's going on. And you made this insight, which I just thought was really great, which was like, it'd be great to see content creators coming into communities and making governance entertaining. And then you posited yourself to say, or maybe the protocol politicians are actually generating the most entertaining content are going to win. What I love about that, and I want to ask you more about that thinking, self-plug a little bit, but when we started Krause House, that was the foundation for us, was let's start a podcast that talks about governance and the journey that we're going through and use that as a distribution platform to talk about the DAO. I have a hypothesis that every single DAO will have an effective podcast, or at least the most successful ones that are coordinating people, because it's just a mechanism of coordinating people. But talk a little bit about the inspiration of that tweet and how you see this potentially evolving.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this in the context of Forefront had put out their first season one governance proposal. And it was really quite a simple proposal. Forefront had existed for almost a year. And so there wasn't anything incredibly controversial in that season one document. It was like, here's what's going on. Here are the guilds that we're going to have. Here are our goals for the season. Still, even though it was a simple proposal, there was quite a bit of conversation back and forth on Discord and then in the forum. And then finally, it had gone up for voting using Snapshot. And so I was like, wow, this is interesting. This is not a complex proposal. And Forefront has done an amazing job sharing this information and all that stuff. It's got to be really hard to track things in like an index co-op or even some of the stuff that's going on with Sushi. There is just a lot of discussion and it is so much content. It's overwhelming. And if it's that hard to participate in any of these votes, to me, I know I'm involved and it's still hard to keep up with things. 90% of people, probably higher than that, probably 99% of people are not even going to read any of this. And so I was thinking about that and thinking about how could you make this easier? And also thinking in the context of some of Gitcoin has done with representative democracy with stewards and all that. And so I was thinking, okay, what might make sense is that these protocol politicians start sharing content that actually simplifies things in big ways. And I think one of the most interesting things about Web3 is transparency in governance and this ability to delegate or not delegate your votes to someone. And so I was starting to think about, okay, what would it look like for people to create content that is super simple, just making it easy and scannable. And I was thinking about this also in the context of, what if the US government did this for elections? It would be very interesting if we had representatives that were a little bit more transparent, but also making it accessible to go through a lot of this information. And so I totally agree. I think the idea of having a podcast is incredibly interesting. I think that over the next 6 months, we're going to see a lot of different DAOs experiment with essentially having different types of media. I think podcast is one. I would love to see more entertaining governance content, to be honest. I think there's something interesting there when it comes to, I love what Bankless has done with Top Signal, which is not at all governance content, but they made it super fun to consume crypto content. So that's the kind of thing that I think will be really cool to watch evolve. And I think a lot of it actually comes down to accessibility. If you have the time to go through governance forums and Discord and all that stuff, cool. A lot of people don't. And I think if we want to make participation better than 2-4%, we have to make it easier to consume.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. TikTok content, it doesn't necessarily have to be actual on TikTok. This short form video cutting through, highlighting, curating, what are the things? Snapchat, some of their stories and how they do the different roll-ups of different events. ESPN does something obviously on there, and there's all sorts of different story, Daily Mail, whatever it may be, all sorts of roll-ups. One thing to be fair about the US politics is they do what you said. It's just that they do it in such a shitty, corrupt way by having these little, hey, we're going to do a Senate committee hearing and I'm going to get my soundbite. And then we're just going to hammer Facebook ads with my soundbite of calling out XYZ person and me saying, don't think you don't pay enough taxes? And that's the snap that we wanted. That's the shot we needed, or a lie from, did you know that the opponent did XYZ? They do that crap all the time. And I think to your point, though, it has become, it's like, we don't even recognize it anymore because it's mudslinging. We don't really talk about what the big thing is. The last thing I can think of is when Obama was doing his American Healthcare Act, he was on Between the Ferns with Zach Galifianakis. He was on late night shows. There were commercials and they were trying to explain the healthcare bill. And it was just a really interesting thing. Like, it wasn't up for vote yet. It was trying to get popular opinion on his side, but he was explaining governance and through pop culture and media. And it was like, that I think was a glimmer of a little bit of what you're talking on, is like, how do we get informed at a level that's not just a massive bill out there or this mudslinging world? How do we actually explain it? And that's the last case I can probably think of. That's probably not a Trump saying we're going to build a wall. But those are the two examples I think of in the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah. And I think when you do that and when you do create these opportunities for people to learn in a way that feels entertaining, you create a sense of community and intimacy within a community that you wouldn't have otherwise. If you're going through governance forums and Discord and you're reading what people say back and forth, you might feel some sense of intimacy, but the reality is that a lot of people aren't doing that. And even if they are, it's just through a screen. It's not, you don't really get that feeling. But I think if you create content that makes you feel like you are with the people who are on the podcast or in the video. And again, I think Top Signal does a really good job with this because it's so playful. You actually create the sense of intimacy between the person who's watching it and the people who are creating it. And so I think there's an opportunity here to actually strengthen community and provide this really special moment, to be honest, where people who are members of a DAO can actually feel like they're part of it, even if they're not super engaged and they're just voting. So I think there's a cool human aspect of this that improves a sense of ownership and ultimately, of course, hopefully increases participation in voting, but just creates a stronger sense of community.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about inclusion in DAOs. How do you think about that and the importance of it?
Yeah, this is something that I've been thinking a lot about generally because I think DAOs are like probably 98% men. It's hard because there's anonymity and pseudo-anonymity and stuff like that. But I've been thinking a lot about how we can bring more women and underrepresented groups in. And so something that I think is super important here to note is a lot of these DAOs, when you come in, a lot of the people don't look like you. If you're someone who's a woman or non-binary or, Black even, there's not a lot of people who look like you within DAOs. And so I think something that I've been thinking a lot about is creating spaces for people who are underrepresented to support each other. We were talking about how it takes someone to step up and take action when it comes to DAOs. And something that generally is a challenge for me specifically, talking as someone who identifies as a woman, can't speak for all other like underrepresented groups, but there's a huge confidence gap between men and women. And so when you're a woman coming into this space, it's not just about your identity as a woman. It's about if you were socialized as a woman, you're not as confident in your work. That's why women, they have to meet like 100% of the job requirements to apply to a job, and men will only need to meet like 60% of them to apply to a job. And so I think it's super important to start not just creating these spaces, but actually like talking about this and addressing it. So I'm glad you brought it up. And I think it's something that DAOs need to be more intentionally thinking about when they design communities.
Do you have any thoughts on tangible ways to do that?
Yes. So I think creating spaces where women, non-binary people, underrepresented people can support each other is huge. We're doing this in Index Co-op. So we have a Women in Index group. And basically, we're working on initiatives to bring more women in, but we also just create a space where we can talk about whatever is going on in our lives. And I think that's super important to have that support network, again, because of the confidence gap. So that's one. The second one that I think is super interesting is scholarships and subsidizing access. So this isn't necessarily something that you need to do with like specific groups. I think it works generally for underrepresented groups, but it also works for people who can't afford membership to some of these DAOs that are like $2,000 to get in. And so FWB has done this, Meta Gamma Delta has done this, Kernel has done this out of Gitcoin. But basically, subsidizing or giving scholarships to different underrepresented groups, I think really helps and make sure that you have a group with diverse backgrounds. So yeah, experimenting with a bunch of different things, those are two ways that I've seen work well so far. I'm hoping that we can continue to experiment and crack this nut a little bit, because I think if the same people who own Web 2 own Web 3, we will have the exact same challenges that we have today, which is you have people calling the shots that maybe don't represent everyone. And I think that would be such a bummer if we built this entire world where ownership is democratized and then we actually just transfer it over to a group that looks very similar to the people who currently own Web2.
Yeah, I appreciate the tactics as examples. I always find that as listeners, if anyone's running a DAO, it's like, okay, like those are two that we can consider to try out. And I think that's always really helpful when we have these conversations. And I entirely agree with you in the sense that it definitely feels about 98% white males type understanding of who's in the space. And it's certainly, my partner, I can continually encourage her to start a DAO, and then she has a really interesting idea to do it, but she's like, I don't know where to start. I don't know where to like who to talk to. And I think I'm surrounded in like-minded and like people in the sense of Twitter and all these DAOs that it's just super simple for me to slide in and slide out of it. I think that building those on-ramps through scholarships and things of that nature is an awesome idea. So I appreciate you to continue to beat that drum, and I will try to do better and do my part of it as well. So thank you for the motivation.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's all about talking about these things. And also, yeah, if anybody, your partner, anyone who's listening to this does want to either create that space, or as a woman or someone who's underrepresented, start one of these things, definitely reach out to me. I'm happy to help on all of that kind of stuff. Again, a lot of it is just about one-on-one supporting people, getting the ball rolling.
Yeah. Yeah. One step at a time. I appreciate you for being on the podcast, and thanks again. And if you could remind people where to find you.
Yes. I'm on Twitter at Chaser Chapman. That's also where I tweet about the podcast. And then, yeah, I'm trying to tweet more. So you can find me there. DM me. Always open to supporting a lot of these efforts.
Great. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Armada podcast. We would greatly appreciate a review in your favorite podcast player. And if you want to stay in the loop even further, head to armada.fm, where we have a repo. You can check out what we're doing and what we're learning along the way. Love to see you there. Thank you.